show had awards, you would be given a gold for being second. Just imagine it, okay? It's the Second Funniest Podcast with Kevin Miller and Justin Worsham. Have fun, guys.
Well, thank you, Sam. Hello, and welcome to the Second Funniest Podcast. This is episode 519. I'm your host, Justin Worsham. With me, as always, is the man who pretends to be afraid of zombies because they are truly afraid of him. The one, the only, the KevinMiller.com. Jump and press the circle button, Kevin.
Thank you very much, Justin. The man made of meat. Mm-hmm. The meat boy, some would say. The braid in my own hair.
Super meat boy.
the pixel. Yeah. I can't remember what the third one was.
The
Fixel.
Hat.
Fez,
yeah.
Just Fez.
Fez.
We're, of course, referencing the movie Indie Gamer,
yeah.
Which is an independent.
Did you ever finally see that?
How would I know unless I was able? How would I be able to
you
reference
it? You read the description as well.
No, I read it. Changed my life.
Yeah?
I regret not watching it the moment you told me to.
Right?
For so many reasons. Let's talk about this movie.
All right.
That was where you're supposed to hit the stinger.
Oh! which one is that? I don't know what stinger you mean.
Sometimes I say things and you react like a cat. Like I don't know what I'm supposed to do right now.
Was that a victim of your bit just now?
Yes, you're like, ah, I failed.
Yeah, I was like, oh, what stinger? What would be good for
okay,
that?
I'll do it again. And now let's talk about that movie.
That wasn't even a hotkey. I had to jump on that one.
Well done.
Yeah.
Indie Gamer.
Yeah. Is it what I was...
I don't know if that seems...
What? Uh-oh.
We need some new stingers.
Why? Did we see two different movies?
Yeah. How many boobs were in
I
your
saw
movie?
A Tomb Raider spinoff. That was awesome.
What did the indie
mean?
Oh,
my God. Did she get shot?
Not any gamer.
Huh?
Indie gamer.
Oh, I didn't see that. I'm not familiar. So we're talking about an amazing documentary that is on Netflix streaming called Indie Gamer, the Movie.
Which has a great opening shot of a classic SNES Turbo controller hanging on... some power lines outside an apartment complex for no reason.
Yeah.
I was like, that just shows me that it's made by some real film nerds that are like, this seems like something arty and weird and kind of non sequitur. And then whenever they needed a transition, like a palate cleansing moment, they'll just show that shot.
Yeah.
I was like, is that going to be relevant? Are we going to? No, nothing. It's just
Chuck
art.
Norris put it there. That's all we know.
He beat Legend of Zelda from that vantage point.
That's funny.
Backwards.
So the game, for those of you that don't know, it follows the making of and release of Super Meat Boy.
That's the only one that it does that. Then it talks about the development of Fez, and then it talks about post the release of Braid.
Braid, that's right.
Yeah. And then they do, it's a little confusing in the beginning. We should get these guys on the show.
I really feel like that Fez was planned to be
Fez
part
and
of
Meat Boy
the development
were.
Release, and that Fez just kept getting pushed back. That's
yeah, that might
feel.
That might be true because it's shot in two parts. The beginning is
a little
confusing.
That's just my interpretation from when I watched.
If you watch it, there's clearly in two sections. So it seems like they come back and then they're like, and instead he's releasing a year later. The things that's confusing, the beginning, they kind of scattershot from a bunch of different developers. And then it's only over time. I'm like, what stories are we tracking here? And there's really only 2.5 guys that you're really tracking the stories.
That are like the main story.
Is like, that's hard work. That's hard documentary. But the three that they eventually, because they talk about the guy from World of Goo, and he's in it for one soundbite, and then that's it. And they're like, well, that's a pretty big game. We want to hear more from that guy. And then the credits have scads of indie gamers that you see nothing from. But what is great about it, right off the beginning, it's super inspiring, especially if you like games, because he goes, are you pulling it up there on your Netflix?
I pull it up to see if I can figure out a way to have the makers on the podcast.
Oh, do it, yes.
Yeah.
So right off the beginning, one of the guys who makes Fez, says, video games are the sum of all medium made interactive. What could be better than that? And I was like, first generation gamer! That's right. It is, because it's everything. Because I was kind of explaining that to my wife later. I was like, I mean, obviously, It's movie and television. That's all clear. It's animation. That's all over the place. It's radio. It's music. It's all those genres. And I was like, now it's physical acting because you do the motion capture stuff. So it's like, it really, I tried to think of an art form that doesn't find its way into video games that you couldn't justify being in there.
Bonsai tree making.
That's an artisan. That's a craft. Oh. So, yeah. Because even other performance arts like dance and singing are now capable within games. Because you have karaoke-based video games and Dance Dance Revolution games.
Podcasting.
Not an art. That's an artisan. That's a craft.
A craft?
Yeah.
I'm a journeyman.
Yeah, that's right. Delicious.
Many inside references.
It's inside references.
So I saw this movie, and I was immensely inspired. And it's one of the things that, like, we've been talking about and trying to get more and more developers and guys in the gaming industry on the show to kind of tell their stories, because it's something that kind of popped out coincidentally from having the people associated with making Sly. Is that I really like hearing people that are passionate about their craft talk about their story and why they're passionate about it. And then also hearing how they deal with the fans' reaction, because it just so happens that their craft has an associated stereotype of having somebody
flamers.
Being hypercritical and
hateful.
Yeah, for no reason. For just like, here, let me get up your butt about this.
What he said, the guy who made Fez, he's like, the thing that's the hardest part for me are feedback from people saying they hate me and I should die because I haven't released the game yet. He does a really good job of like breaking down games. He's like, Grand Theft Auto, 5 years, 1,000 people. Red Dead Redemption, five years, 1,000 people.
That's always been my point about this, is that what I think is so interesting, and that if you get angry, you get some nerd rage over a movie or a television, I think that it's kind of common knowledge for the most part. Like, whatever your perception is of how the process goes is pretty dead on.
Yeah.
But that there is virtually no perception on what it takes to make a game.
Yeah.
That is not common knowledge, and yet people are so willing to jump up everybody's butts about how it's not happening the way they need it to.
There's an impression that people are just, we've talked about this before, that people are just sneezing out these games.
Right.
Like, people have the same reaction to movies. Like, they didn't think through everything.
Well, that's what I think is happening. I think they're displacing the process for movies and television onto video games.
But neither are true.
And it's not.
People, like, soap operas are the only thing where you can say people did it once and moved on, because that's how soap operas work. Live television for news has that, because they are literally getting their content in the moment. But there is scads of hours of pre-production that go into both of those so that they can deal with that sort of quick changes and alterations. The movies, if you don't think that a movie that you see in a movie theater outside of some independent film, and even those are going to count, that isn't watched nearly frame for frame, and the amount of hours per frame in the film, you're mistaken. And the same is true in video games. If you think that you blasting through a video game like Sly Cooper Thieves in Time or any game, like I beat it in 12 hours, it's so easy. It took thousands, if not tens of thousands, no, hundreds of thousands of man hours across the board, across all the disciplines, to get that game into your hand.
Yeah.
And to think that it's just thrown together is arrogance and ignorance.
Well, like I ran across, there's a what they call a bug in Mass Effect 3, for anybody who has seen it or whatever, there's a Citadel Hanar diplomat like side mission.
Yeah.
And there's these like specific steps that you have to do, and it doesn't really explain it to you. And if you don't do it, then it just, and it keeps hanging up on you where you can't finish it. But there's elements where it says you could, but then you go to that part where you're, what you're supposed to do, and you can't do it. Mm-hmm. And I did some searching around, and there are people that are like, we need a patch for this, fix this bug now.
Yeah.
Give me the patch. Like, that's what all the message boards are saying. And I'm like, wow. Like, this is tertiary side mission at best. And everybody's like, I want my patch now. And then their reasoning for a lot of these people were, I like to finish all the missions, so where's the patch?
Yeah.
We really need you guys to fix this now. And I'm like, that's interesting.
You will eat.
Yeah.
You will breathe. You will drink water. You will have a shelter over your head, all independent of whether or not you get that patch.
Right.
And to put
I'm like, I'm Googling around to try and find a way to fix this. And I'm like, I've already seen what happens in it. Like, I got mad at myself at the calories I'd burned just by watching the mission play out on a walkthrough on IGN's YouTube channel. and then still trying to find a way to fix it in my own game. Like, I wonder if I could figure this out. And I'm like, what are you doing? Just play the game and move on.
You'll
move on with your damn life, you moron. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? Look at you.
Unless it affects the game, and you're saying it doesn't.
The part that it seemed to me is that I'm like, well, if I spend, say I figure it out in 15 minutes, I could get war assets. There's ways that it earns it towards the game.
But that's okay. So you don't have to devalue that, because the whole point of playing the game is to play the game.
Like, right.
I don't want to swing the other way and say, well, don't bother trying to fix it, because then we have to cast the whole thing into question of, like, why are we doing this?
I guess the point I'm trying to make is there's a certain level of diminishing return.
Yeah, and absolutely.
And I hit it, and I moved on.
Right, and that's a healthy reaction to something. But to sit on forums, to sit on blog posts, and that's what, at the end of this film, that's so great, not to ruin it for you, but when Meat Boy is released, the wife of one of the two guys developing it, the more artist guy, is just in tears, because she's like, people just act like you just threw this thing together, and it, mm-hmm. you know, and the movie drags it. Like, they make it very clear that these two guys, it nearly killed them to put Super Meat Boy out on the market. Now, the return
frustration
was phenomenal.
And sadness that you feel when it gets released and it's not on their featured page. And then
that was almost like reverse nerd rage, because now I was like, it's interesting, especially in the context of saying what we just said about people not having a patience. So what happens at the end, the big dramatic thing is they bust their humps to get it out on time. The day the game is released, it doesn't show up on the splash page of the Xbox homepage like they thought it was going to be. And I was like, they don't tell you what time of day it is. They don't tell you when it is. But it was like, if you know anything about marketing people, they have all that stuff broken down to a science. And there could be a very real reason why they were waiting until a certain point.
No, I don't buy that.
Day.
Because it
felt suspiciously missing, is all I'm saying. No. Like, his reaction was over, seemed to be like, upgraded nerd rage. Like, now yelling at Microsoft, you don't understand. I need this up there now, instead of Microsoft going, we're Xbox. This isn't our first rodeo. We know how to sell games. Hold on.
See, here's what I think it is that Xbox, like, his frustration is he's put all these hours, right?
Yeah.
Xbox knows they're not going to make a ton of money. Like, you know what I mean? They're thinking Gears of War, Halo. That's where we make our bread.
Yeah. AAA games, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So this is their Xbox is doing him a favor by putting him up there and being featured. The reason he's frustrated is he's got, you know, 5-6 years, whatever it was, of his life invested in this thing, and how it starts dictates everything.
I thought that was very true.
You know what I mean?
It was suspicious in the terms of the film for them.
Like,
not
you
to
thought
say,
it seemed produced.
Yeah, well, no, just that it was over, like, because he's clearly an overdramatic guy.
Right.
He was very...
And they let him go instead of saying, hey, guys, really, it'll probably come on in
2 hours. They may even said, like, we know, we plan to release it at noon, because that's when we know that people are turning on the Xbox.
But the filmmakers didn't allow us to receive that answer.
That's what I'm saying. Like, then they let him... But it still is true. Like, he said the things that he said.
I don't buy that Xbox did it on purpose. I buy that it's more plausible that somebody just didn't care and it didn't happen when it was supposed to.
Yeah, and they got behind it. And,
right.
But, you know,
as somebody who's going through the process of purchasing a home, where we're literally talking about $500,000, the amount of times that people will just drop the ball because it's not their $500,000 and it's not their house that's on the line. That to me, and maybe I'm displacing my own perspective.
No,
but
I think
it makes it make sense.
But we look at our friends.
Why he cares so much more than they would.
Yeah, we look at our friends Christian and Evelyn, and they'll talk about how much flack they'll get when there's just a minor ad problem when they used to work for Yahoo. Mm-hmm. And they were just selling ad slots. They weren't developing ads or anything. All they were schedulers for how and when the ads would show up.
In.
And people would crucify them when their ads weren't up. So I only say that to say, like, it's an important industry. Like, like cyber sales and those sort of things are.
Yeah, and he could also be looking at it from that standpoint that what if they don't get featured at all?
Yeah, and that's what
in
I think
in that case,
he was
if
panicking.
They don't get featured at all, then it could be toast, you know? But, it's a really, and I don't think we're spoiling anything. If you haven't seen it, it's a really.
Well, you know, the movie gets really, you know, all these movies exist, or the games exist, rather, because they're in the stores.
But it's really, that's what I'm trying to say, is that these guys go from being these two guys who just put, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, and are barely scraping by financially, and in a period of 4 days become millionaires.
Yeah.
Because they made something that they were really passionate about, and really stood behind, and it worked out for them. And I like that story. And I know that you and I have had conversations like that where, like, especially when it comes to, like, the Hollywood industry or whatever, where Like, you know, don't come here just because or whatever. Yeah. Like, just because you have a hope.
Because you think
a,
you need to be famous.
Right. And that's
you
that's
your
desire.
You
want
to be known.
Right.
That's not the way
and
to be known.
I think, like, I wish that that was more of a prevalent miss. Like, if we were to go back to a tribal society and tell legend.
Games will be hard
right.
to play. It'll be sticks in a jar.
Yeah. Where, you know, legends and lore are told of people. I really, because to me, in my personal little bubble, this to me is the crux of the American dream, like yeah. the American story, the American motivation is that this idea that I don't know if this is going to work, but I believe in it wholeheartedly, yeah. and I believe enough to commit my entire life to it for a dedicated amount of time and just hope that I get something out of it. And then it pays off.
And
even though I'm sure that there are more examples of it not paying off than it not, I would much rather have a society and culture of everybody having that eye of the tiger and a motor to make it happen than I would everybody kind of looking around, well, it's probably not going to happen for me, so I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah, I don't want to fail, so I'm not even going
to try. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Because what is exciting about it and what is so different than a lot of stories like that is that they do exactly what you're saying, is that they lay it all down on the line.
Yeah.
And that they believe in it. Like, it never at once, they don't talk about how they can't wait for their game to be out there or for they can't wait for people to play it. It was more about, I create this because I have to.
Yeah.
I don't have another choice. This is what, I must create this game. And then several of them were like, the reason why they do indie games in general is because they want to create, it's an art expression.
Yes.
Like, I create this, I do programming and code, mm-hmm. but I'm doing art and music and lights and camera movement, all that because you need to know how I feel.
And I got the vibe from the Meat Boy guys that they were like, we wanted to do our own thing, and what we're doing here we couldn't do working for someone else.
We got parodies, we can do a little more edgy, doesn't have to be as smooth.
And
as
I feel
polished.
Like that's something that kind of talks to my inner being for me. Like, those were the guys that I really connected with. The guy that did Fez, I just felt like I just wanted to hug that guy through my TV so bad when he was at that Game Con.
Right, because that was another level of, see, what was the Meat Boy guys are kind of your constant. Like, this, you could assume, is the challenge that is set before every serious indie gamer is to build a game in isolation and to spend 16-hour days, 7 days a week, because you care. And then this other guy, Fez, kind of has this, like, other series of problems where his former business partner decides to pull and tries to screw him almost at every turn. And so to watch his, like,
He doesn't even try to screw him. It's that by him not acting, he could, because he, in order for them to be able to move forward, he has to essentially release his rights to the game.
And that could have been, that story could have been anything. That could have been a movie. That could have been a piece of software. That could have been a car engine. It could have been real estate. Like, it could be a restaurant. And that, I felt like, well, that's just good television. Like, they kind of got lucky of, like, that's just some cool stuff to see.
But the part I'm talking about is that when he's actually there at his little booth, and then the Xboxes kept crashing because there was, like, bugs in the code, and he was just, like, to see him get so frustrated, he's like, oh, there's a bug there. Okay.
Yeah.
And he would have to come in and reset it and get in there and say, okay, sorry, let me just do this. And I always, what I really did like about it is that just so happened that the film, that the video that they got was all video of guys that were cool with it. They weren't angry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They were just kind of sitting there playing like, oh, okay.
Because guaranteed at GDC or PAX, they were at PAX.
Yeah.
That stuff is happening every 2 yards.
Right.
Like, it's all...
But this poor guy is way overreacting. Yeah. And that's another part that I just now realized that I can kind of relate, where it's like, when you have, like, for me in stand-up, it's like when I put out a CD or something like that, I want it to be really good. And I almost have to fight that urge that I have of, like, oh, it's not that. And I have to just keep telling myself, you are going to be way more critical than anybody else who listens to this.
And that's the encouragement
the
they
people
had
who buy
well.
It are people that are like, I want to laugh.
Yeah.
They're not looking to not laugh.
Right.
Saying, I liked you. I want to laugh. That's why I bought this.
I gave you $10.
And
Yeah, and that was the encouragement that I appreciated from them, is that it's going to be raw. It's going to be rough around the edges. It's going to work, but it's not going to be super polished. And when you kind of think of games in that terms, and then I go back and I play a Portal 2. I played that through this past 2 weeks. And it's like, you start to realize, when you contrast it to a game like Super Meat Boy or Fez, of just how much is in a game like that. And then me as a consumer, I won't even put it in the plural because maybe some people are a little more savvy than I, of like, oh, it's unfair to put all these things on the same level of these AAA games. Like, there are going to be these different levels of intensity and volume and customization and all the things that you can, like, it just seems so easy as a consumer. You're like, why can't it do all these things? Why can't you build a game that does all these incredible things? Or this should be really easy because this game does that or this game does that. It was like, because
do you really believe it? Because I feel, and I guess here's, I don't want this to sound like I think I'm better than everyone, but it's like, I have, that's one of my biggest issues with this whole nerd raid concept is that I go, I've never felt that way. I've never looked at a game and said, this is horrible through the eyes of, why would you do this? You know what I'm saying? Like, I've looked at it and said things like, this is not for me, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And I've always felt like, I don't understand what goes into doing this, so it's unfair for me to say that my opinion has any merit beyond it just being my personal opinion. And that for somebody to get actually angry at somebody, and it, like you said, to wish death upon them, horrible things on their family, like, that's, it's not even terrible. It's just stupid. It's just a level of stupidity that is just disgusting.
No, I wouldn't put myself in that group, but I do mean that it gave me eyes to see what a game development company of two people is capable of, and a game development of 1,000 people is capable of.
Yeah.
So then it explains why when I sit down and play StarCraft, and their mission statement is to create the most epic experiences anyone has ever experienced ever.
Right.
Something like that. And then I watch their opening cutscene, as we discussed earlier, and it's like better than most feature films. Then I go, oh, okay. That's what happens when you have a game or a game company that has, I don't even know how many, 10,000 people working at Epic or at a Blizzard. And then Super Meat Boy, which is fun and colorful and interesting, but is little more than an iPhone game, really, when you get down to the structure and the abilities to it. Of like, okay, it just gives me a grammar to it.
What I like, and what that made me think of, is that to me, I felt like these are concentrated games.
Yeah.
And that what I liked about what they were trying to say, about what their artistic intention was with Meat Boy, was that they just wanted to make a good old-style type game.
That made you angry.
Yeah, that was really hard, that you had to really try. And they said, they had some shots of guys playing the game and laughing when they died with frustration. And I go, you know, that's interesting. It's been a while since I've felt that kind of thing. And I remember when I was younger, if you ever, like, anybody who ever is close to our age or went back, like, tried to play, like,
first-generation gamer!
Like Battletoads, but I guess Mario is a good example of that. Where there's elements of Mario that were for me that I'm like, why?
Yeah.
And it's what I've noticed is these older guys, when you grow up with that and you're a young child and you don't have the ability to process, you know, that that this isn't real, like in the bigger picture, you know what I mean? When you're a little older, you have a little bit more of a worldly perspective, and you can laugh at how frustrating it is for you. Like, oh, man, come on.
See, that's interesting, because I feel like a game like Super Meat Boy isn't intentionally hard. I never got the impression when I played Battletoads that the developers are like, let's make a hard game. From back in that day, the industry was so new that they're like, we built a game. I don't understand.
Yeah, guys.
What do you mean it's hard?
We just made a game.
Played it all the way through without dying.
You knew exactly what to do.
I don't understand. And now we have games that kind of, that there's a scale for that of like, it can be this hard.
Well, and I just like that there was, so that it boiled down to that there was an artistic intention, like a thematic look to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that there was a basic engine of gameplay, and that all they had to do was add those two kind of ingredients together, and they could make something that encapsulated a very similar, not in the same way, but you were engulfed in it in the same kind of level that you would be, say, with a StarCraft.
Yeah.
Like, that's what
I
really...
But yes.
No, you know what I'm saying? Like, if that was a thing where you're like, you know what, I'm gonna finish Super Meat Boy, you could easily become just as invested in that as you would StarCraft.
Well, and that's the beautiful thing.
Without all the bells and whistles.
Right. And that's the beautiful thing at the end that he got teared up, or the artist on Super Meat Boy. He said, I don't remember what word he said, but it's pretty amazing that he created this game and that it's inspiring the next generation of gamers. Like, he was a kid, he played games, he grew up, he wanted to make a game, and he's like, I know.
There's an 8-year-old out there playing Super Meat Boy that's like, I want to do something like
I want to do this. And it just meant the world to him in this very humbling, real way of being like, I have given that gift of that burden of artistry to some other kid that they are going to be, they won't be able to rest until they make
like
their
own. Like
a
bug that bit them.
Yeah. And it'd be like,
artistic malaria.
When I was a kid, I could not stop playing Super Meat Boy. That's why I have to create this game. Yeah. So as soon as the movie was over, I downloaded all three of those games.
Oh.
Have you played any of them?
No.
Okay. So Super Meat Boy is stupid. It is so stupid hard.
Okay, good. I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said stupid hard because I was like, oh.
Being a first-generation gamer, I played Battletoads because I loved Battletoads and I loved Ninja Turtles and I loved that whole, but I could not get past the training level in that game.
Yeah.
So for me, my brother, who's younger than I, loved Oddworld and those games, which were kind of the last of the make yourself want to hang yourself playing games, which is just about sheer precision.
Again, I felt like that was unintentional with Oddworld.
And then eventually they're like, well, this is what we do.
Yeah,
so.
But Abe's Odyssey, they're like, oh, let's do this.
Yeah, here's what you have to do.
Let's make this really
that's
hard.
That's what I'm saying. Take it to the level. So Meat Boy does that, and I got that joy of like, you got me. Oh, that's not easy. And I played through, and it's fun. The reason they're able to take you to that place because the character moves faster than any other of that genre that I played before. So you actually, instead of like speed, you fly at
a momentum builder.
Yeah, you just, I don't even understand the physics, but it makes sense when you play it of like, you can book it across the screen. And so that creates this like careening out of control down a highway feeling, but you are slamming into blades and being shredded into blood everywhere. And so you're like, it's very satisfying. It reminded me of when you and I played the Portal 2 co-ops and I hit that button and crushed you, exit. Yeah. I was like, and my visceral
just laugh.
Yes! reaction. That's what Meat Boy is for the first 5 minutes. And then the next 5 minutes are
lots of Q-Bertian.
Yeah. So there was a level that I was like, no, I can get this. I can get this. And 10 minutes later, I'm like, you know, the point of diminishing returns, I was like, I can never get this. I'm not this guy. Off. So then I went over to Fez. Because that, I can, if you saw Fez, it's a, so that's Super Meat Boy.
It's more
Super
of a puzzle
Hunger.
Game, yeah?
It's puzzly. He described it as a stop and smell the roses game. The thing that is so brilliant about it, it's like, why hasn't somebody thought of this sooner? Why isn't this a AAA game? Is that it's a 2D side scroller that you then can turn 90 degrees, and so whatever the wall in front of you then shifts, and you see it from the other angle, and you shift, and you see it from the other angle, and you can actually spin. The worlds are in three dimensions, but you only play them two dimensions at a time.
Oh,
and so you go along like this cave, and then you're like, I can't jump up to this next level, but you turn the camera 90 degrees and the whole world rotates with you, and then suddenly there's a ladder, or the brick that was far away now at this axis are close to each other, and so you're able to make a very easy jump, and then you turn it again the other way, and now there's a door there that you couldn't access from the other angle. As a gamer goes, it's a game for gamers, because you're like, this, I wish I could do this. I wish I could play Mario Brothers and flip
and
the camera
this
90 degrees all day long.
I wish this were a patch for every other game.
Yeah, and it's great. And so the puzzle aspect of it is very fun. There's no action to it. There's no shooting. There's no dodging of any real serious enemies. It's just sort of going around and trying to figure out how to move your character through this four-dimensional, two-dimensional world. And it's great. In the film, he talks about it being a stop and smell the roses kind of game, and that all of these are artistic expressions of some. Super Meat Boy is grungy and gritty, like Mega Man-y, kind of like blades and saws and grungy. And then this is like old school Mario Brothers, blue skies, butterflies.
Which I thought was really interesting, because the guys who made Meat Boy were like, look like Slipknot fans.
Yeah.
And then this guy is like a French Canadian.
Yeah, right? That's exactly it. It's like, rainbows and talking gold chest. So that one is a lot of fun, but it was just, I played it and I was like, well, I get the appeal. I wanted a little more Meat Boy. I wanted more challenge, whereas Meat Boy offered too much challenge. And then I played Braid, which was critically acclaimed before the movie came out and had not made.
That was their touchstone for a successful indie game.
Yeah, like this
that
is how it could
happen.
Be. And the guy, I think you mentioned him on the show before. The guy had such a level of artistry and craftsmanship in the game that they talk about this in the film, didn't feel that his fans understood that.
Yeah, even the people that would post on message boards about how much they loved it, he was known for getting on those message boards and correcting them. And about how they were wrong about why they loved it.
And And you can see, play the game, and you'll know why. You haven't played it.
No.
So the thing that's genius about it is that they took this function that was in Prince of Persia? Yeah.
Yes.
Where you go backwards. When you die, you actually use Sands of Time, and you go back. And you saw
but
a little bit of
that. Instead of it being limited, it's unlimited.
So it's a VCR.
Yeah.
And it is unlimited. That is not an exaggeration. I played a level all the way, just to test it, all the way from beginning to end, and then thought, oh, it's probably only like 10 seconds or 20 seconds. No. The whole way back to the very, and did everything. I played for like 5 minutes, bounced around, did a bunch of stuff, ran around, went back and forth, and then watched it. Then what I found out through experimentation is it goes 2x, 4x, 8x, and 16x speed in both directions.
Wow.
So once I go all the way back, I can zip back forward to the end of the level at 16 times speed. And it's fun because as you go backwards, it all becomes kind of muted in color, like a memory. And if you go forward, it comes extra vibrant and super, like, really bright, which is fun. So the style of art in the game is unlike those other two and really any other game where the... Goodbye. The character looks very old school, like 1920s flapper boy.
It's like 16-bit, yeah?
Yeah, no, it's a no. It looks like a 32? Painting. Maybe 32, but a grade up. So like, there's nothing that's heavy. The sprites don't have a lot of depth. There's not a lot of sprites or like a lot of pictures for one thing. It's a lot of simple animatics, but the craftsmanship in each one is very detailed.
Yeah,
and
the levels I saw were gorgeous too.
Beautiful, and then the puzzle aspect of it. So the time control aspect of it is what really. I was like, oh, this is well thought up because you halfway through, I'm like, oh, I have to get to this puzzle. I'm like, well, the only way to do that is if I jump off of this guy and bounce. That's going to be hard to time. And then I realized, oh, you want me to use this time control thing until I can find the exact nanosecond that I'm supposed to jump off of this thing to bounce off that other guy. Had I been able to do, like, had you done it in a classical game where you kept dying and then you have to run back and, like, you never would have found it fun. But the fact that it's time control, I'm like, no, too soon, too late, too soon, too late, too soon, soon. There. And finally able to, after maybe 6 or 7 tries of the time jumping, able to get it. And then the whole time, there's this soundtrack that is, it's like, really great classical music that is just drawing you into the whole thing. I felt hypnotized when it was done. Like, this is true craft. Like, talk about an art form. And it's not just because it looks like a painting.
Yeah.
There is a level of love in all three of these games that I think we don't see in a lot of work, games or otherwise, that it was clearly done by people that were passionate about what they were doing, believed in what they were doing, and had a little extra spin, a little novelty to it that kind of rose them to the top of the indie ladder. So go get
those.
And
it's all like Rock Band, but it's hairstyling. Is that why it's called Braid?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know why it's called Braid. It's like Memento the Game.
I think it's like braiding time. Like,
yeah, because he's trying to remember something. It's a story that he's forgotten, and he's trying to piece it together.
Oh, it's all good talk. We've done two episodes now, for the listener to know, where what we intended to talk about was not what actually was discussed.
To be fair, I knew we were talking about this.
Oh.
Both episodes. Find out what I have in store for our next episode.
That I will not know. Give us a call, 408-228-4911, or send us an email to show@secondfunniestpodcast.com. Don't forget to join the conversation with us at facebook.com/secondfunniestpodcast. Follow us on the Twitter @secondfunniest. And also the big, big thing that I want everybody listening to do is please go to facebook.com/IWantSlyCooper in his own animated series. And please throw a like on that so we can make a cartoon and say that we did it. Just like these indie gamer guys, we could get that phone call where we go, hey, guess what? We're going to be millionaires. You guys won't be millionaires. Well, maybe we won't be millionaires either. Someone will be a millionaire. Probably won't be you. Maybe us. But it'll be worth it because you'll have a piece of it. And we'll probably buy someone a PlayStation 3 again. On behalf of my good friend.
It'll be $10 by then.
On behalf of my good friend, Kevin Miller, is Just Worship saying, okay, bye.